Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton, your leading source of Kyle Orton hatred, blowback on the internet.
Travis found this graphic today. It was, he posted it. It was like top five most hated former NFL players, and it was all based on like scraping social media, and it had Kyle Orton listed fifth behind like four guys who are all active broadcasters. And so I'm sure the reason that people are bitching about them every week is people are like, I friggin' hate, you know, Mark Sanchez in the booth. And also people have some other reasons to hate Mark Sanchez right now. Tell you what, Mark Sanchez, amazing job. That is, he has somehow made it so the butt fumble is not the first thing I think of now when someone says Mark Sanchez.
Shaking an old man in an alley.
That's the one way that you can bump that one out of the picture.
Good job, pal.
But yeah, no, it was Kyle Orton, and I was like, why would Kyle Orton draw so much hate? He hasn't even done an interview since he retired, as far as, and then I was like, Oh my God, I think it's scraping social media for all of the people yelling at me on Twitter and assuming that it's Kyle Orton's specific hate.
Kyle Orton is hanging out right now in Altoona teaching children, minding his own business, and his reputation is getting besmirched because a random dude of the podcast.
Kyle Orton doing the 50 Cent. What he say fuck me for?
What? Who is this? Why do people hate me? This is a problem, though. He might actually come out into the ether, and he'll be like, why?
Yeah.
What are people saying about me? And he'll find you, finally, after all these years.
So, anyways, Kyle Orton's a good
place. What are we doing tonight, Kyle?
Because Kyle was an ethical and honorable quarterback. And the theme tonight is talking about quarterbacks who are not that. So I wanted to do this episode now because it bleeds into it. Actually, it touches on a couple different things because it bleeds into the draft and why evaluating quarterbacks gets harder every year in the draft. Yeah. And why I'm a little concerned about, I don't want to touch too much into the Fernando Mendoza narrative because I have to save that for our episode in a little bit, but I'll touch a little bit on that. And it also kind of, weirdly enough, it also, like all things in my life, it comes back to Caleb Williams' completion percentage a little bit.
Like all things in life.
I'll in my life at least, I'll tie it off there. But no, I mean, if you listen to this podcast, I think you've caught bits and pieces of it when I'm talking about quarterbacks or like when I talk about dishonorable football or when I take a shot at RPO based offenses and really that's not just me either. Like, I think this is also where, you know, Steven Ruiz is a guy that I really like. We chat sometimes and he does the Ringer quarterback rankings. And sometimes he really pisses people off because he will do shit. Like, even in the best year of Jalen Hurts' career, I don't think I think the highest he put him was like 14th or something. And that really pisses people off. And I don't always agree with Steven, but I understand where Steven comes from, too. And Nate Tice is kind of the same way when he talks about quarterback prospects and what he likes and what, you know, what he looks for in quarterbacks as a rookie. And, you know, he's real harsh on guys like Jackson Dart. And people are like, why does he hate Jackson Dart so much? Blah, blah, blah. And you get all of these guys are kind of getting at the same thing, which is that there is a certain style of quarterback that all things considered is what we would consider to be the ideal archetype of a quarterback. And we live now in a world where college offenses and NFL offenses have over the last decade sort of moved in this place where a lot of guys can play quarterback and put up decent numbers and have success without ever playing like that style of quarterback. And it's interesting because I think we are entering an era where the pendulum's starting to swing back against that type of quarterback now specifically. And it's going to be more of a problem to be that core type of quarterback in coming years than it has been. But anyway, so this type of quarterback is what I call them gremlin rules quarterbacks. And it actually, what's funny is the gremlin rules part comes from Mitch Trubisky. And what was really funny is that the problem with Mitch actually was that Matt Nagy was trying to make him a gremlin rules quarterback, and he wasn't actually very good at it. He wanted to be a different kind of system quarterback, and I'll go into that in a little bit too, called he was like a Shanahan, he wanted to be like a Shanahan bot. He wanted to just like, if you just put me under center and only bootleg me, I can look okay. And that's a different kind of, there are two different ways to kind of system quarterback right now. That Nagy wanted to be one, Mitch wanted to be the other. But I used the gremlin rules term with Mitch because Mitch had his supporters, and they were kind of like the Justin Fields supporters, right? I used it for Justin Fields too, because they were the same way. And it was like, no, he's not a bad quarterback. You just only have to run these kinds of plays with him, and you can only use this, and you can't ever ask him to be in a situation where the defense knows he has to pass. That's not fair. You can't. And I called it gremlin rules because, you know, I don't know if the youth, has Gen Z ever watched the movie Gremlins?
Gremlin is a very old movie. Maybe Gremlins 2. Maybe we've seen that.
Well, Gremlins 2 is an underrated cinematic masterpiece.
Everyone, I love Gremlins 2. Is my favorite.
Yeah, Gremlins 2 is outstanding. But the whole point of Gremlins is in the movie Gremlins, there's the Mogwai. It's this cute little Furby. Oh, God, do they even know what Furbies are? Fuck. It's a cute little...
Yes, because there are long Furbies now.
They do?
And they have, like, remade Furby into a new thing. My daughter knew what a Furby was. She wanted
long
a Furby for a time.
Furby. That sounds
eldritch. Type it into Google, buddy. It's horrible.
I don't think I want to do that. I don't think... Okay.
It is uncomfortable. Right.
We're focusing on Gremlins, not long Furbies. Anyway, so there's the Mogwai, cute little Furby guy. But the rule was that there were all these different rules to care for them, and you couldn't do this, and they're this or that, and you couldn't feed them after midnight, or else they turn into a horrible monster. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was with Mitch and then with Justin both, where it's like, look, you can't just have him play quarterback, and you can't just put him in expected pass situations, and you always have to do this, and there always has to be play action, and there always has to be, you have to be able to do RPOs, and you can't ever ask him to play real quarterback, damn it. And I'm like, okay, but if he needs all of that to look successful, if he needs all those different gremlin rules to look successful, that's not a real quarterback. That's the problem. If you don't have one of those guys, and especially when it comes to paying them, that's a real problem. But I thought the best place to start on all of this was because I think people need to understand that, yes, passing has improved in the NFL over the last couple of decades. Like, it's obviously become more easy to throw the football. And I think there's a lot of different reasons for that. But like, a lot of it goes back to our boy Mike Leach and Hal Mummy and the air raid. Because I don't think, this is what's really funny, is I don't know a lot of people, like, I think most kids nowadays, even like 20 years old kids, their high school probably threw the football. Like, they threw the ball. They did. And I don't think people realize that for the longest time, high school football and even college, most programs did not throw the ball, like, at all. Travis and I went to a high school. Our head coach ran the Delaware I. That man considered it a personal point of pride to go the entire season with single-digit pass attempts. He absolutely hated throwing the football. And that was more normal. We were in a conference of, like, 10 teams, and there was one team that threw the ball more than 10 times a game. And everyone talked about them like they were pinko commies. There's pure hatred for these effeminate passers. And the effect of that was, like, Joe Namath, I think I looked this up, Joe Namath had fewer than 100 career pass attempts in college. And then he went to the NFL. And in the NFL, in the early days of the AFL, they were a passing heavy league, and he was asked to throw the ball 400 times, and he threw just as many interceptions as touchdowns, sometimes more. And, like, most of NFL history, that's where, like, hey, you got to give rookie quarterbacks 3 years, and you got to do, because it took time to transition these guys who basically, and that's why draft busts were even more common. Then that's how you got guys like Rick Meyer, my old enemy, who, like, he didn't even throw the ball at Notre Dame. Rick Meyer was purely, he threw like 10 passes a game. He was an option quarterback at Notre Dame. He was drafted in the first round and got so many chances just because he was big, he was strong, he was fast, and he had a good arm. Back then, that was all you needed. Dan McGuire, Mark McGuire's brother, was a first-round pick solely because he was, like, 6'8". And people were like, well, hell, he's got to be a good quarterback, right? So all of these guys took forever to develop. And for most of the 80s and 90s especially, you had two styles of passing offense in the NFL. You had guys who were from the Coryell tree, which eventually is what Ben Johnson is from. They emphasize vertical passing. 5-step drop, 7-step drop, throwing to a spot. They emphasize vertical passing over short passes. That was like Coryell, who begat Mike Martz and begat Al Saunders and all of those guys. Norv Turner's from that tree. And then you also have the West Coast offense guys, which starts with Bill Walsh, and that's Joe Montana. And those are the guys who introduced, like, Bill Walsh's whole thing was, he was like, why is it that a 4-yard run is considered a success, but a 4-yard pass is considered a failure? Like, you're getting 4 yards either way. So he was the first one to be like, what if we just throwed a bunch of slants? What if we threw in the flats? What if we, and that's where you saw the rise of the first like 60% completion passers and all of that. But the thing with both of those offenses is, and Bill Walsh would always tell you, it really takes guys about 3 years to master this offense. Mike Martz loved to talk about how you didn't really see the full version of his offense until 3 years in. Like, they're very complicated. They require a ton of moving parts. They require a ton of precision. It's very hard to ask high school kids and college kids to run these offenses. You don't get enough reps. You don't get enough practice time. And you're turning over 70% of your starters every single year. You just can't do it. And that's why, like, the few guys, even Bill Walsh, when he went and coached at Stanford, he tried to take his offense to Stanford and it fucking sucked. He wasn't very good there. Like, the West Coast offense never took off in college the way it did in the pros. So then you get Mike Leach and Hal Mumme, started at Iowa Wesleyan, but they got their big break at Kentucky in the 90s. They were the guys that were like, what if we spread these guys out? We do shotgun 4 and 5 wide on every play, because these linebackers are fat and slow, and these players have been built to play the run their whole lives. Get them out in space, and we'll throw short passes and quick screens, and we'll do this and we'll do that. And we'll just beat the shit out, and they can't keep up with us. And the whole thing about the spread offense, I think Mike Leach said, I think there were a grand total of like 15 plays. They didn't even have an actual, Tim Couch, when he was drafted number one overall, the famous thing to talk about was he didn't have a playbook. They literally didn't have a playbook. They just had a handful of plays that they ran from enough different formations that you could make it look like more than that. But it was, the whole point was, and this was what he preached, they could install the system in a week. They could teach any kid to run it in a week, rep it hundreds of times, even in just a college practice, and then you get into the season, and all of these defenses were just not built to stop this. And so that's how you had Tim Couch put up like 6,000 yards in the SEC in the 90s, go first overall. You had Texas Tech, when Leach was there, just put up great. Every year he would put in a different quarterback and throw for 4,000. And then that stuff starts to spread. And then you get to the point where by the middle 2000s, that's the dominant college offense in most places. And the SEC, you know, Alabama became a place that fucking threw the ball. And that's how you got Ole Miss running Lane Kiffin's RPO bullshit nowadays. Like, all that stuff starts to proliferate. And now most high schools, most colleges, like, these kids are going to passing camps when they're 11 and stuff. And they're going all of that. So now all of these quarterbacks that start to enter the NFL in the 2010s, these are the guys who've been raised in these spread offenses. And so they know how to throw the ball. They're used to throwing the ball. But they don't throw it the way the old NFL used to throw it. They're not under center. They're not doing hard play action. They're playing in the spread. And so then you see the NFL starts to, it's like 10 years behind college, but then you see the NFL, it starts in like 2012, really, when they had the Kaepernick year running the pistol, and you see Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, they're going into the shotgun spread there. And that, the same thing happens in the NFL that happened in college. You had linebackers, you know, you had the Dante Hightowers of the world. Travis loved Dante Hightower, was one of his favorite players, but that was a downhill thumping linebacker. This offense was built to face a league that was full of those guys. And so then you have crazy passing explosions in the NFL. Especially in 2017, you know, people ask, like, what the hell happened to Carson Wentz? What the hell happened to Deshaun Watson? And it's because those guys first got their start in that 2017 to 2020 era of football, when the RPO, the spread, all of that had gotten full blown in the NFL, and defenses still weren't really built to counter it, to stop it. And so you could make Deshaun Watson look like a great NFL quarterback for, just by running RPOs, just by running, you know, go balls, by spreading people out, by doing all of this stuff. And so his fall off, yes, it's got a lot to do with obviously his off field stuff and with him being gone a couple of years and, you know, not being able to shake off that rust, losing some athleticism from the injuries. But it's also just as much about the fact that, like, the way the Texans used him was new and novel then, and it's not now. And the same thing happened to Carson Wentz. If you go back to the 2017 Eagles and watch, like, it's just laughably easy looking at some of the RPO concepts and stuff they were getting away with then that you can't now. And the same thing happened with Mitch Trubisky in 2018. Like, he had, they used these RPOs, they used these screens, they used these concepts in the first year of Nagy, and the second year people really caught on to this shit. But anyways, all of this is to say, you have an NFL now that has been reoriented to run these spread offenses, and now you're starting to see the defense has slowly started to decline, or I mean offenses scoring has started to go downhill the last couple of years, because you have these Fangio, these two high shell defenses that have disseminated to slow down this specific kind of offense. And the linebackers are lighter. Travis and I, a couple years ago on the podcast, were bemoaning the fact that there wasn't a single linebacker prospect at the combine that weighed 250 pounds.
All the linebackers look like safeties to us.
And what was it? What was it we said on that episode? We said, "What, you know what the next move's going to fucking be? What
is just run the fucker downhill.
It's just going to run the damn ball."
Yeah.
And that's why the current wave of offenses that are the offensive geniuses, the Kyle Shanahans, the Ben Johnsons, the Sean McVay, look at their offenses and what are the main things they do. They run the ball, they go under center, and they rip deep passes off of play action. Because the whole thing about the spread is that it was built not to, like, the deep passes they mostly throw are go balls. They're one-on-one isolation plays. You don't get a whole lot of those, and it really puts a premium on wide receiver talent to do that. But they're mostly built on short passing. And so defenses are reorienting to stop those things. And so the new revolution in football is actually just because football's the new revolution is to go back to early 2000s offense, because literally go back to this is the offense that we used to run back when defenses weren't built to stop it. And then when defenses got heavier and built to stop this, that's when the spread happened. So the Gremlin rules quarterbacks. It's not that this is not viable or that it wasn't, like, it was cutting edge once. I mean, Tom Brady was running this shit. Like, the 2007 Patriots, I believe, were the first NFL offense ever that took more than 50% of their snaps from the gun. Like, at one point, it was, like, the best quarterback in the NFL. And Andy Reid, at his time, was a genius to run this shit. But the pendulum's swinging back the other way. And the problem is that there are some quarterbacks who absolutely need this style of offense to survive. Like, they've never shown the ability to do the stuff you kind of need to do in the other thing, in the other style of offense. And so that's where the Gremlin rules come into play. And this is why Jalen Hurts is the perfect guy. He's always the hot point for this, because we have seen Jalen, and it's really funny because it's like every other year, because there are just certain things you have to do in order to be successful like this. So Jalen, when the Eagles can run the ball and when they've got two good wide receivers on the outside, Jalen Hurts can be a very efficient quarterback, and especially when he runs the ball. Because the whole thing about the Gremlin rules thing is you really have to keep defenses in single high safety. You have to make them keep a guy in the box, because then you get one of your wide receivers matched up one-on-one on the outside. You can take your shot play down the outside, and you can use your quarterback to give you a plus one in the box, even if they bring a safety down. All of that stuff kind of matters. And so it's like the Eagles every other year, they go through these fits and start. Their offense wasn't very good in 2021. Was very good in 2022 when they really mashed the hell out of Jalen Hurts as a running threat, and they first got AJ, and AJ was in his prime, and they were able to throw those go balls all day long. And then 2023, they couldn't run the ball as well. Defenses played too high. Jalen threw a career high interception. Their offense fell way off. They respond to that by getting Saquon Barkley. Saquon goes off. We see defenses have to bring a safety into the box. The Eagles offense goes off again. A year later, Saquon falls off a little bit, because that's what happens when running backs get crazy usage. They fall off the next year almost always. The Eagles offense struggles again. They're the perfect example of this, because it's not that this isn't still a viable offense. It's just that, like, it is an offense that has a pretty simple conceptual defense to it. It's literally just you have to be able to play the run and keep two safeties deep. If you can do that, you can usually beat those guys. Now, that's harder said than done when you have a guy like Jalen Hurts, because, like I said, a lot of times he is the answer to this himself, because no, he does not like to throw over the middle of the field. He does not like to run quick game. You can't use him like he's Joe Montana when defenses adjust. He is limited that way. But if he's willing to run and he's successful as a runner, that still can make defenses respect him enough to open up what he likes to do as a passer. But I think the sticking point there is there are guys who see Jalen Hurts, see that inconsistency. And then the other end of this coin is a guy like Justin Herbert, where it's like he doesn't have the postseason success. We have seen him be in bad offenses. We've seen him be in good offenses. But I think the reason, like, the tape watchers, the film guy, they really love Justin Herbert is that you could drop Justin Herbert into any one of 32 NFL offensive schemes and make him work somehow. You can't do that with Jalen Hurts. And so even though in the scheme that he's in, when it's working, he has had more success than Justin Hurts or that Justin Herbert has had when his scheme is working. I think that's kind of the fundamental difference in how certain guys look at the game, how, like, you know, the Stephen Reeses, Nate Tices, how they grade quarterbacks, and how you get fans who, you know, the fans don't really care how the sausage get made most of the time. They just look at, you know, EPA, whatever, or rings, and there's like, my guy's good. Why aren't you giving my guy the proper respect? Why are you saying this guy is better? And that's the fundamental divide there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, obviously you want to bring, Jalen Hurts versus Justin Herbert into this, because that's kind of like the boiling of the frog here.
That is like the,
on the Scottcast,
like,
right?
It's like the front line of the, the war between these two, approaches.
Yeah. Yeah. And it ends up being like the dividing line between you and I. It's not that we don't both agree on who those two guys are. It's that we disagree about the efficacy of those two guys, of those two different options. To me, I'm like, give me the guy who can do two things amazingly well and just can't do the other shit, because it gives you these guide rails and these guidelines. Like, if you handed me Jalen Hurts and you're like, you got to build an offense, you've got half the budget, the other half went to the defense, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't really care about the offensive line. They have to run block, not pass block. I need a good running back and I need deep options on the outside, right? And that's it. You get a guy like Justin Herbert, and he's good at everything. He's a jack of all trades. He's probably the best of that kind of quarterback in the NFL right now. There's really nothing he can't do well. But you handed me Justin Herbert, and you said, build the offense. I'd be like, I mean, anything, I guess. You could give me whatever you want. Yeah. It could be whatever, so there's no rules. And then you get Greg Roman as an offensive coordinator, and you're like, okay, but that's probably wrong. Right. Yeah. Like that's not right. But who is right for that guy? And, you know, you have a guy. The best way to explain what's going on between those two is the presence of Kellen Moore. You know, I think we all like Kellen Moore. He really struggled with Justin Herbert the year he had with him, which kind of shocked us both. Went over to Jalen Hurts, and we both, before that season, we thought Jalen is doomed. Like, Kellen Moore's offense won't work with Jalen Hurts. There's no way. And so Kellen just went in there. He spent like one half trying to run his offense, and he was like, fuck it, we're doing the Jalen Hurts. And they won a Super Bowl.
Well, and that's what's so funny, because the Eagles fans always argue with me. They're like, well, they don't call plays that have him go over the middle. And I'm like, all right, guys, it's been four different offensive coordinators, all of whom in all of their other stops use the middle of the field way more. When Kellen Moore had Dak Prescott and Justin Herbert, he loved throwing the middle of the field. When he had Jalen Hurts, he didn't for some reason. The common link there is Jalen Hurts. It's clearly him, but at the same time, and that's what I think people misunderstand sometimes when I talk about these guys. It can work. It's just that the requirements are, I mean, because like you talk about like, you dismiss quarterback prospects out of hand, and people are like, well, he could be the next Brock Purdy, because you're like, okay, yeah, but how often does the next Brock Purdy land in the situation that's going to allow you to have that much success with Brock Purdy? It's kind of a one-on-one situation there. Jalen Hurts to me is that one-of-one. How often is a guy that has all the Jalen Hurts requirements going to land on a team that for over a decade now has consistently had the best offensive line in the NFC, has consistently had outside ball winners at wide receiver? It's kind of like, and another guy that I gets a lot less flack for this, but I give him some flack. Joe Burrow is actually kind of one of these guys. In some ways he's not, but Joe Burrow, if you look, Joe Burrow has never liked throwing to the middle of the field a lot. Joe Burrow never goes under center. And while some people, you know, people are always like, it's really funny how people have started to understand how much sacks are a quarterback stat, but they refuse to apply that to Joe Burrow. People just whistle past the graveyard of his pressure to sack rate being over 20% every year. They whistle right past the fact that every other quarterback that plays for the Bengals every time he gets hurt, which is a lot, takes fewer sacks behind the same offensive line, because Joe Burrow, absolutely, he wants to play like he is 2013 Peyton Manning every year. He wants to be in the gun. He wants to survey everything. They don't use a lot of pre-snap motion. They don't use a lot of this stuff. He wants to play in the spread, and he wants his two outside ball winners. He's got Ja'Marr Chase. He's got T. Higgins. Like, and obviously that can work because Joe Burrow puts up great numbers a lot. Joe Burrow is an awesome quarterback. I'm not saying he's not. But, like, when people talk top, you know, why isn't Joe Burrow in these conversations, blah, 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 with Josh Allen in your case, like, it's just that Joe Burrow is just outside that top five for me, or he's closer to five than he is to one, because there are limitations to being Joe Burrow. There is, you can, like, he needs, like, if Joe, we haven't seen Joe Burrow without that wide receiver talent. Actually, we have. And when Ja'Marr Chase has been injured, when Joe Burrow has been out there, I don't know if you all noticed, but he had a year where his yards per attempt dropped to like 6.3 when he was out there playing without, because when he doesn't have those go balls to throw deep, and he throws the best go ball in the NFL, maybe in history. Like, that's what that field is. When he doesn't have that, he doesn't have a lot of answers. And that's the thing, is that, like, it's a matter of, like you said, you give me a guy that does two things really, really well versus a guy that does everything kind of well. I'm on the total opposite, because I look at Jalen Hurts and I say, anytime a team, especially in 2025, anytime a team was able to just stay in too high against the Eagles all day long, they had no answers, because they can't just say, okay, you're going to stay back, we'll throw a quick game. He doesn't throw quick game. They can't say, oh, you're going to keep your two safeties back. That deep crosser over the middle is open. He won't throw that deep crosser over the middle. I look at a guy and I'm like, I want the guy that you don't have one weird trick to stop. So that's where you know, people when are like, how can Steven Ruiz do this? Why can't he look at EPA per play? Blah. That's not what he's looking at. He's looking at a guy and he's saying, like, I could put this guy into 30 other situations and I'd still mostly get the same guy. And this guy needs a very precise set of circumstances to thrive. And I don't trust those circumstances. Now, in Jalen's case, he won, man, because he got the circumstances to align just enough that he got the ring. So, you know, the Jalen stands can win on that one, which is part of my, like, why are the Jalen stands so angry? Like, you guys got the ring. Like,
they're from Philadelphia.
Do you understand that, like, that you don't?
I think the big issue with Jalen Hurts, which is why I'm always going to rep this guy, is right after he won the Super Bowl, it felt like immediately people were like, yeah, but he sucks shit. Like, fuck that guy. Like, he just won Super Bowl MVP. I don't give a shit. Like,
he did average under 200 yards per game in that season. Like, yeah. That's...
It didn't matter.
It wasn't him. Like,
it didn't matter.
Yeah, I mean...
It didn't matter. So, anyway, another... I want to get back to that too high safety thing, because I think it's Jalen Hurts and another guy that shows a great dichotomy between the gremlin QB and a dishonorable quarterback. But I think we would be remiss not to mention Jared Goff as another gremlin QB, guy who has a very different specific rule
right
set.
Well, that's not a gremlin QB to me. That's the other kind of system QB. The other kind of system QB is the Shanahan robot. Those are the guys that, like, they need their under center play action. They need the threat of the run game in a different way. They need to be able to throw middle of the field. Those guys also kind of have one weird trick to stop. And that is, okay, I've put any pressure on you at all and you crumple. Like, that's the funny thing is there's two different kinds of system quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And that's the other point I was going to make is all of that. When people talk about passing in the NFL is so much better nowadays, it is and it isn't, because the quarterbacks at the top have kind of, there's all the number of elite quarterbacks, in my opinion, has never really changed. At any given time, there's 5 to 8 guys who are those really good quarterbacks that you can put in almost any situation, that you can put in true dropback situations, that can carry your offense. Like, those guys don't actually change that much throughout history. What has actually changed over the last 20 years is that we have way raised the floor of the bad quarterbacks, because there are,
yeah,
like, I 20 years ago, Jalen Hurts was Vince Young, and we saw what happened to Vince Young.
Yep.
Jeff Fisher was like, what the fuck
another
is this?
Another quarterback who I will love till the end of my days.
Jeff Fisher looked at this and was like, what the fuck is this? I get this off my team. I don't want to deal with this freak. What's he doing with that? He's running the ball, coach. Fuck, why is he doing that? Yeah. He's a quarterback. Now, if Vince Young got to do it all over again nowadays, some coach would have been like, Vince, we're going to run RPO. We're going to throw go balls. You're going to get 8 to 9 design carries a game. You're going to scramble when things get messy. And by God, we're going to win 11 games. That's what would happen now. Yeah. 20 years ago, they screamed bloody murder and ran him out of the league. People weren't ready for that. Michael Vick, no one really knew what to do with him. That's why Michael Vick was more average. He was never really good until he got to Philadelphia, where Andy Reid was just sort of on the cusp of starting to do this kind of stuff. But like, so I sent these numbers to you because I was looking and you know how I love adjusted net yards per attempt, folks.
Yeah.
So I went back. I went back exactly 20 years. In 2005, the top 10 quarterbacks in the league averaged 7 yards, adjusted net yards per attempt. In 2025, the top 10 quarterbacks averaged 7.4 yards, adjusted net yards per attempt. So the top 10 quarterbacks have only gotten 0.4 yards more efficient in 20 years. But if you looked at, I went down and I looked at the lower middle class of quarterbacks and the lower class of quarterbacks 20 years ago. So the quarterbacks that ranked 20th to 29th in adjusted net yards per attempt in 2005, they averaged 4.8 yards of adjusted net yards per attempt. That's basically a little bit, about half yard better than JJ McCarthy this year. So like all of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL 20 years ago were playing like JJ McCarthy. In 2025, that range of quarterbacks was 5.9 adjusted net yards per attempt. So the top tier of quarterbacks, the top 10 guys, they haven't changed that much. Less than half a yard in terms of efficiency. Those guys are as good as they've ever been, and as rare and as hard to find as they've ever been. It's just that over the last 20 years, coaches have gotten a lot better at meeting this middle to lower tier of quarterback where they are and saying, you know what, you're not good at that. We're not going to fucking ask you to do it. So that's why they're over a yard better. The Bo Nix was 21st, I believe, this year in adjusted net yards per attempt. And I think in 2005, what he did would have ranked like 13th or something. And it's not that I think that Bo Nix, deep in his heart of hearts, is actually that much better raw talent-wise than the 20th best quarterback 20 years ago. But like, you go back and, you know, I'm writing my book about Bears quarterback history, and you go back and you look at like how Ron Turner treated Kyle Orton as a rookie. Kyle Orton coming out of Purdue, a spread offense, basketball on grass. Ron Turner being like, son, you're only going to throw on 3rd and 9 against ferocious pass rushes that know you have to throw the ball, because otherwise I'm just not even going to attempt to try to let you throw the ball. And it was naturally horrifying. He was absolutely terrible. Now, if Kyle Orton had played, I go back to the Mac. I always contrast the Kyle Orton rookie year with the Mac Jones rookie year with the Patriots. Like Josh McDaniels, when he had Mac Jones, was like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do everything in our power so that you never face a single 3rd and long passing situation in your life. We're going to throw on 1st and 10, because if you get 4 yards, that's awesome. It's 2nd and 6. We're going to throw a screen on 2nd and 6. We'll get you to 3rd and 2. And then on 3rd and 2, we're going to hand off the damn ball. All we want in life is to keep you out of a situation where the defense knows you have to pass. And that makes life so much easier on these guys. And that's Bo Nix. Like, well, I'll get into the numbers here in a second, because I did find a way to kind of quantify some of these things that I'm talking about. Bo Nix, through 2 years, has never been asked to do anything that is hard. For Bo Nix, he does not throw to the middle of the field. It's scary. He does not throw interim passes really hardly at all. It's either short behind the line of scrimmage or chucking a deep ball outside the numbers where either his guy catches it or nobody does. Usually nobody does. Like, that's Bo Nix. And when it's like, and when you're really scared, just run the damn ball, son. It's okay. We'll do zone read 4 or 5 times a game when we really need 5 yards, and you scramble when you're in trouble. Ball. That's what they tell a Bo Nix to do now. 20 years ago, they would have said, we know you're Bo Nix. We're nonetheless going to ask you to play like you're Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And then be surprised when the results are horribly bad. So all of this stuff has not really raised the ceiling of NFL quarterbacking. It's just raised the floor. And that's the thing. And that's good. Like, it's good for the league in general. It makes the games way more watchable. And it's good because it gives you more viable paths to winning as a team, because the Eagles won a Super Bowl with Jalen Hurts because they never asked Jalen Hurts to not be anything that he isn't. And they're running into some trouble now because they've never asked him to be anything that he isn't. And when they kind of need, they're in situations where it's like, hey, Jalen, we kind of need you to do some stuff you're uncomfortable with. That's not happening. And I think the two other examples of the Gremlins guys, before I get into the actual numbers on these guys, that like are the cautionary tale for me. The number one one is Kyler Murray, because Kyler came into the league right at the peak of all of this. 2019, 2020, the COVID year, 2020 especially, that was the year defense was purely fictional. RPOs were everywhere. This Josh, if you go back and you watch 2020 Josh Allen versus 2025 Josh Allen, it's incredible how different the Bills offense is. Josh, the Bills were the most their most successful formation in 2020 was literally shotgun, five wide, empty. They were just throwing mesh and doing all this shit nonstop. Defenses have no answer for it. Now, you can the Bills have become notable for running mesh super ineffectively, because everyone has an answer for mesh now. Like, they know what mesh is. Yeah. It's not revolutionary anymore. They lost that Texans game famously because they went to run mesh, which they always do, and they're gotta have it situations. And the Texans were running the routes for their guys because, like, yeah, we know you're gonna run mesh here, dude. 2020 was revolutionary. Kyler came in at those way right at that wave, and in 2019, 2020 with Cliff Kingsbury, it was the peak of this, where it's like, we're not going to ask you to do anything you're uncomfortable with. You're not going under center ever. You don't need to throw middle of the field. If things get messy, just scramble outside the pocket. Chuck the ball downfield, man. It's going to be fine. We'll run screens. We'll do all of this stuff. Don't worry about it. And for a couple years, that really worked well for Kyler Murray. It got him paid. And now here we are a couple years later. Kyler Murray has had an ACL injury. He's had other injuries. He's not as fast and elusive as he was when he entered the league. He can't just go off script and scramble all of the time. But he still doesn't want to go under center. The Cardinals tried that last year. It didn't really work. They used it less this year. Didn't really work. They ended up benching the guy, basically, whether they call it that or not. And Kyler's never really learned to take his medicine. He's never learned how to play any other kind of quarterback. And now he's toxic around the league. Like, people don't want to touch him. And you know, people are like, I can't. The league is now turning back to these Shanahan systems, these Ben Johnson systems that take time, that take throwing with anticipation, that take throwing to the middle of the field, that take all of this stuff that Kyler Murray's never shown any ability to do. He's the perfect example of this. And this is why, for all of the growing pains that Caleb Williams had this year with the Bears offense, the alternative was possibly letting him go down a Caleb Williams path, or down a Kyler Murray path, because it would have been so easy for the Bears to be like, let's get the closest head coach or offensive coordinator to Cliff Kingsbury or Lincoln Riley that we can get. Just only ask Caleb Williams to do the stuff that he's already comfortable with. And Shane Waldron kind of tried to do that. He was just really bad at it as a rookie. He was just really bad at last year, but get a guy like this, and in the short term, you might have gotten, you know, Caleb would have a higher completion percentage. Everybody would be way calmer about it, about that. And maybe for a year or two, you'd get better numbers out of Caleb, but then they'd run into this same wall that a lot of these guys that Kyler Murray's running into, where like defenses have answers for this now. They're not taken away. Like, the athletic quarterback has become the norm now. Like, they're not taken aback by scramblers as easily as they used to be. So, like, all this stuff that Ben Johnson had Caleb learn how to do. He was third in the NFL in under center snaps this year behind frickin' Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff, like two guys who are longtime veterans. And yeah, there were some growing pains. We saw some missed throws where Caleb was throwing with his anticipation. His wide receiver was in the wrong spot, or Caleb was a tick late and he gunned the ball to get it there and he'd miss wide or whatever. We saw the growing pains with that. But then towards the end of the year, you really start to see Caleb take off, and in year three I think you'll see him become even more efficient. But it's because they made it. Ben Johnson was like, no, the future of the league is in the past. We are cycling back to early 2000s football. And the other thing about that is that's why rookie quarterbacks really did used to take 2 or 3 years to hit their stride. And so when people freak out about Caleb Williams completion percentage and stuff, I say, well, his completion percentage really similar through 2 years to Matthew Stafford, really similar through 2 years to Andrew Luck. Those guys were very similar to him in terms of their being number one overall, prospects in terms of Stafford, especially having just crazy, silly arm strength and sometimes needing to learn how to dial it back a little bit. Very similar guys. People are like, you can't compare completion percentage now to completion percentage 10, 15 years ago. The game's changed. And it's like, okay, but the game hasn't actually changed. Some offensive schemes changed. Like, yes, if Caleb Williams was running the 2024 Commanders offense and completing 58% of his passes, I'd be real fucking scared right now. Yeah. But Caleb was 27th this year in the percentage of his pass attempts that were aimed behind the line of scrimmage. He was 25th in the percentage of his pass attempts that went 0 to 9 yards. Like, they're not the reason his completion percentage looks like Andrew Luck in 2013 is because they're asking him to run the same kind of shit that Andrew Luck was being asked to run in 2013. It's under center. It's heavy vertical stuff. There's not all tons of gimmies and layups because that's not how defenses used to be built. It's not how offenses used to be built. So, like, that's why I don't freak out about the completion percentage. I look at him like, okay, well, what's the result of this? And when you see that he's 11th in adjusted net yards per attempt, they're 9th in dropback EPA, they lead the NFL in explosives, they do all that stuff. It's like, okay, then this is an overblown concern. Like, the completion percentage is low, it'll improve a little bit with time, but like, this is not an offense built to generate completion percentage, and a lot of offenses over the last 10 years absolutely have been, but that's not what the Bears are asking Caleb Williams to do. That's not why I'm not concerned, because no, there's absolutely historical precedent for this. You just got to go back to the last time we used to be raising quarterbacks in an environment like this, and Andrew Luck took time to find that balance between gunning it and throwing it in there, and when to go for the hero or when to go for the shot downfield and when to check it down. Like, that takes time. That calibration takes time. And then you have, on the other end of the spectrum, you have a guy like Jaden Daniels, who's immediately good as a rookie, but slowly starts to fall off. His completion percentage, or not his completion percentage, his yards per attempt since October of 2024 are now down to like 6.5 yards per attempt, because defense is adjusted to what Cliff Kingsbury wanted to do with him. They slowly figured out, like, hey, this kid, once he starts running, he doesn't throw the ball. So they blitzed him a lot more this year. They found answers for what he likes to do. And you see his clean pocket scramble rate go right back to where it was in college. It's over 10%. It was why I didn't like him as a quarterback. Literally 10% of the time when this guy is in a clean pocket with no pressure, he's not trying to find a pass at all. He just runs. He's scrambling 15% of the time against pressure, right? Just like he did in college. He's panicking. When he's under pressure, he's not looking for these, because he's never been made to take his medicine. He's never been made to learn how to do this stuff. It's always been take the shot play if it's there, throw the slant if it's not, throw the hitch if it's not, scramble if nothing else. And that's his answer. That's what he's been raised in, these spread offenses. He's been raised to be a gremlin his whole career. And we're entering an era that is now built to stop those guys more than it was. So that's why, like, I didn't overreact to Jaden Daniels' rookie year. I could tell what it was. I didn't overreact to Caleb Williams' rookie year. I didn't know what it was. And now you see Caleb. It's why Kurt Warner, you know, every time he'd be interviewed on The Score, he'd be like, I love what the Bears are doing because they're running a real NFL offense. And, like, there's a lot of things that can be a real NFL offense. And like I was saying, there was a time this kind of offense, this spread offense, it was the NFL revolutionary cutting edge stuff. Andy Reid is not a fraud and a hack because this is what he was doing 10 years ago. He was doing it 10 years ago when no one else was doing it. It was genius then. But the game always cycles back around. So Kurt Warner's like, this looks like a real NFL offense, because it totally does look like the NFL offenses that he ran.
Gosh. Beautiful. A while back, about 10 minutes ago, I started to space out because you said Clips Kingsbury. And I started workshopping
great
Washington Commanders related remix of Chains and
Have you
Whips.
Ever seen the man? Have you ever seen the man with a bad haircut? That's Clips Kingsbury.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, I'm going to release that track. I've got Dan Quinn said, Cliffy, you must be sick. All you talk about is throwing it quick. And I'm just, it's yeah. The whole thing's gonna go.
Yeah, I feel so bad. I knew this was
mentioned Jaden Daniels.
I knew this was gonna be an episode where I just monologued a lot. But it's what's weird is, like, I have always wanted to go off on a spiel on this kind of stuff, and I didn't think anybody would listen to an hour of me talking about scheme and bullshit. But I've had multiple people be like, "You talk about the Gremlin quarterbacks in passing. Could you just, like, explain that in detail?" I'm like, "You guys want a TED talk on the Gremlin quarterback? I'll do it."
I need you standing up there with a whiteboard. I need you to have the clip microphone on. But yeah, you mentioned Jaden Daniels. That's the guy I like to compare to Jalen Hurts in my mind, because both, to me, are Gremlin Rules quarterbacks. To me, it's, you got three different types of quarterbacks, Kyle. You got Gremlins, you got Jacks of all trades, and then you've got your freaks. And your freaks are like your Jacks of all trades, but also they will happily do anything to any part of the field, and they'll make these off-platform plays. Caleb wants to be, you know, up there with the Mahomes and Allens of the world. You know, negative examples would be like an Anthony Richardson or something. But the difference between a guy like Jaden Daniels and Jalen Hurts, even though they're similar in many ways, in essence, they require your team to perform a skill check against the other team. Can you force me to get out of this too high safety look? If you could stay in that too high shell, we're fucked. Like, you know, you've got us. Sorry, it doesn't work. Our team is built to get you to move out of that. But if you move out of it, now you're fucked. Because we just have too many weapons. We're too powerful. However, Jaden Daniels gets there a completely different way. It's RPOs. It's quick game. It's, you know, like you said, it's running. It's scrambling. It's sometimes it's designed runs. It's having a good running game. Is there a difference in there? To me, that makes, well, maybe this is just me talking from the heart. I see Jalen Hurts as more of an honorable quarterback because he's kind of like Drew Bledsoe with wheels, right? He's like, I'm either going to get hit, I'm going to throw the fucking ball down the sidelines, I'm going to do some play action, right? My run game's going to work.
The key difference for me there, and I noticed when I was crunching their numbers in the spreadsheet before the draft, I said one of the best case scenarios for Jaden is Jalen. Like, there are a lot of similarities. But the two things that were not similar, Jalen Hurts had a much better pressure to sack rate in college than Jaden. And in the NFL, he takes more sacks than a lot of quarterbacks would behind that Eagles offensive line, but he still takes way fewer sacks than Jaden Daniels does. So that's one problem. The other, Jalen Hurts has absolutely always been super aggressive about bombing it downfield. He'll take that, and that's the thing, Jalen Hurts will absolutely throw a 50-50 ball. Now, it helps that he has A.J. Brown, no doubt, and he's got Devonta Smith, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But Jalen Hurts has not ever been scared to bomb it downfield. What was my big complaint about Jaden Daniels is people were overrating his deep ball completion percentage in college that last year because he had those two wide receivers. But I was like, he still only went deep at a below average rate. And only in that one year was he even close to average. Every other year of his college career, he only went deep about 13% of the time. And I said, I was like, the history of those guys, deep attempt percentage is one of the main things I look at for a prospect because guys don't generally get braver in the NFL. They don't force the ball into tighter coverage in the NFL. And everyone's like, and everyone's still, because they, yes, Jalen or Jaden, God, talking about those two together is really hard for me.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels throws a beautiful deep ball. Like, it looks so good, and he's always going to grade out really well in terms of PFF grade on deep throws because when he throws it, and it's almost always that goddamn slot fade, it's a beautiful arcing throw. But he doesn't throw it that often. And so so Jalen Hurts this year was sixth in the NFL in deep attempt percentage. He will keep the defense honest. Jaden Daniels, hold on. Oh, he didn't even get enough attempts to
qualify. I don't think he qualifies, right?
Yeah. Jaden Daniels, Jaden Daniels was at 10.1%. Let me see. So if he had qualified, where would that have ranked him? It would have ranked him 28th.
Okay, yeah. And Daniel Jones territory, essentially.
And even last year, when he was really, really good, and everybody was freaking out, Jaden Daniels was 31st in deep attempt percentage.
Yeah.
He doesn't throw it if it's not a clear one-on-one, my guy has this, and as I said the whole time in the whole breakdown, I was like, you just don't get those opportunities in the NFL. You can't, if you're only throwing, and this is Bryce Young too, because Panthers fans who have become real big fans of mine in recent months, Panthers fans were like, PFF shared a graphic where they're like, Bryce Young, number one graded deep passer in the NFL 2025. And I'm like, okay, but he was 34th in deep attempt percentage. Yes, you're going to throw an accurate deep ball, and you're going to have a really good grade if you're only throwing it deep when it's a go ball and a guy has a clear step of separation. You can't make a living like that. Meanwhile, you have Caleb Williams this year, who threw 94 deep passes. Literally, Caleb was... There were only two quarterbacks in the entire league this year, Stafford and Caleb, who threw more than 90 deep passing attempts. There were only five guys who even threw 80. Caleb had 20 more deep passing attempts than Dak Prescott, who was seventh in deep attempts in the NFL. Like, that's how mad bombs out the Bears' passing offense was. But the thing is like, that, like, that's what you have to be. You have to be willing. Like, someone pointed out, but this is basically the equivalent of the NBA realizing. And it's funny because one of the things I criticized when Jaden Daniels was drafted was that supposedly the, quote, idiot basketball guys that Ben referred to the Commanders owners, you know, Scott Harris, the 76ers guy who now owns the Commanders and is in the Epstein files, that guy, he called the idiot basketball guys, as he called them. Scott Harris compared the deep ball in football to the three-point attempt. And he's not wrong, actually. Like, the Bears, I think, are one of the first offenses to really figure out what the NBA figured out, which is it's better to shoot 40% from three than 50% from two. So he wasn't wrong there, but he picked the wrong guy. Like, Jaden Daniels, I was like, yeah, he's an accurate deep ball passer, but he's not going to be a volume. He'd be like if Steph Curry was scared to shoot. Like, he's not going to, like, yeah. Right. You got to draft Steph Curry. I don't know the NBA well enough to know who's a guy that is that has good shooting, 3-point shooting percentage, but never actually shoots the ball. You give me a name for that, Travis, please.
Oh my God. A guy
who I'm has asking
a
you to really make an NBA reference. This is your moment.
He doesn't
he can make a 3-point shot, but he doesn't shoot the three.
Kyle, in today's NBA, everybody just chucks up fucking threes whenever they possibly can. This is like, okay, my biggest gripe with watching professional basketball right now is that everybody has decided Daryl Morey was a genius.
Yeah.
And we all need to take bullshit fouls. We need to chuck up threes whenever we can. Everybody shoots 20 threes a game. So no, I have nobody. I wish there was a person like that.
But yeah, so Jaden and Jalen they're similar archetypes, but yeah, Jalen is the more successful version of the archetype because yeah, you have to take the deep shots to survive like that. You have to back those you have to force them to respect that deep ball. Otherwise they're 100%. They'll just go to single high safety or they'll blitz the shit out of you. That's been their answer for Jaden, is just blitz the shit out of him because they figure out that once you move him off his spot, he doesn't throw the ball. So they're not, last year as a rookie, they were scared to blitz him. They're not scared to blitz him this year. That was the big adjustment. And we said, so Jaden Daniels, the success for him, if it was going to happen in the NFL, he needs to be basically Alex Smith. He needs to complete 80% of his short passes, complete the 10 deep attempts he takes all year long. And he needs to just like never have interceptions, negative plays. And that was who he was for 1 year as a rookie, but it's hard to keep living like that. And so that's why we saw it fall off in year two. That's why, like, I didn't respect that guy.
And you mentioned this a little bit, and we don't really even have to get into Mendoza yet to talk about it, but these prospects coming out of college now, specifically out of certain offenses.
Well, this was the problem with Jackson
Tennessee,
Dart. We didn't even...
Indiana, right, and you said Jackson Dart.
We didn't even talk about Jackson Dart last year pre-draft because I was like, I don't know what to fucking make of that guy.
Yeah, because we've gone from, like... You know, what you were describing, we're like, oh, these guys aren't really ready, right? They're mostly out of the shotgun. Like, they're you know, running these spread concepts that weren't really compatible in the NFL at the time. What we have now are guys who maybe don't understand what's happening around
right, they're not
them.
Even, it's not even, like, mesh and Y-cross have become NFL concepts. That used to be the air raids. They're not even doing that shit anymore. Yeah. Now it's just like, Tennessee literally tells the wide receivers on one half of the field not to run. They're like, save your energy. We're not targeting you on this one. Like, it just keeps getting worse.
Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin is running like five plays.
Yeah.
That's it. Like,
yeah, and we'll
the
talk
quarterback
about it
is like, one, two, three, run. And
yeah,
that,
we'll talk about it when
we
get into this
offense.
With Mendoza, because people keep comparing him to like Matt Ryan, and he's the perfect fit for Clint Kubiak's scheme. And I'm just like, boy, you are projecting a lot that's just not there on tape.
Yeah, and like because you said, it's just going to take time now for a guy like that. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what football really is. And like, this is why last year when Jaden Daniels was playing early, I got so upset when he played the Bears and he ran the RPO and he pump faked on it. And then he threw the pass, and then the refs threw the flag for an ineligible guy downfield. And I was like, that is a guy who doesn't understand football, who's just really good at football.
Well, and like
he, but he doesn't know what's going on.
Well, and like we'll talk about Jackson Dart more when we get to the QB ranking episodes. But Jackson Dart is a guy like they, you know, people really get excited about Jackson Dart because like, oh, by EPA. And this is part of become my war on EPA, too, is that people like EPA put so much emphasis on QB rushing and scrambles, which are just inherently unstable, that people are like, oh, by the EPA, he was Jaden Daniels, like by adjusted net yards per attempt. Jaden Daniels had like the 12th best rookie passing season this century. It was good. It was nothing crazy. Certainly nothing that was so good that you're like, oh, there's no possible way this guy fell off. It wasn't even as good as a passer, relative league average as RG3 was in his year. But when people are like the greatest rookie season ever, they would cite EPA because EPA fucking loves scrambles. It loves designed quarterback runs. It loves a dude who converts on fourth down, all of which he did in spades, none of which has historically been super stable year to year. And so Jaden Daniels, like I said, he got like 43% of his EPA last year from his legs. And that's just not a sustainable percent. Like even when Lamar's been great, like Lamar still usually is like a 60-40, or like it's like a 70-30 split. Like he's still producing mostly as a passer. Jaden Daniels is so dependent on his legs. That's why I didn't trust it. And that's Jackson Dart too. Like Jackson Dart ended up finishing 17th this year in ESPN's QBR, but I looked at QBR because it's one that measures, like it tries to measure pass and rushing together. And there have only been two other seasons since they started QBR in 2006, and ironically both of them were in 2006, where a guy finished in the top like 16 in QBR, but Jackson Dart was 29th in pass EPA, or in ESPN's pass EPA. His finish as 16th in QBR was because he was first in rushing EPA.
Yeah.
And I was like, that doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel like that's sustainable. And I looked, and so the three guys who have finished average-ish in QBR overall while being bottom five in pass EPA but top five in rush EPA, the three guys that had done it before him were Michael Vick in 2006, Vince Young in 2006, mm-hmm. and Justin Fields in 2022.
There you go.
And that's why his passing yards were so low. He was under like 160 passing yards per game. And if you look at the list of rookie quarterbacks who finished with that few passing yards per game, that's an ugly list too. And like that's why I don't put any stock in Jackson Dart, because he remains the gremliniest gremlin in the NFL. Like they still haven't asked this guy to play. Like even when the Giants, that's why Brian Daboll got fired, because he was using him so much as a runner. But once Brian Daboll got fired, you notice Jackson Dart didn't have any good games after that, because they took the new staff was like, okay, well, we can't run the kid. We don't want him to get hurt. But if you don't run him, he can't do a damn thing. They're down 38-14 or whatever in the fourth quarter of one game I was watching, and they're still not letting him throw the ball. They're not even letting him air it out in garbage time, because the kid can't be trusted to make a read and throw the ball without injuring himself. He only knows RPO, scramble, design run, chuck ball up down sideline. That's all he knows. So he doesn't, like, even when they're trailing, you can't just run a regular passing off. It's not capable of it. So to tie all this off, as we get to the end, I brought numbers to the table. I quantified these things.
Bring them out.
So what I looked at was the quarterbacks who threw to the middle of the field on the lowest percentage of their attempts. Now, I define middle of the field as between the hash marks, 10 plus yards. Because some people gotcha me one time when they were like, Jaden Daniels did throw middle of the field in college. And I'm like, okay, those are all 5 yard curls right in front of his face. That's not what we mean. We're talking deep posts. We're talking deep crossers. We're talking all of these the middle of the field, intermediate and deep passes that you have to throw with anticipation. You have to read the coverage correctly. You have to know where the safeties and the linebackers are. The Jared Goff zone, that's the middle of the field.
Yeah.
So I looked at the guys who threw to the middle of the field the least, who went under center on the lowest percentage of their snaps, who had RPOs as the highest percentage of their pass attempts, who had screens as the highest percentage of their pass attempts, and also who had the most designed quarterback runs per pass attempt was how I decided to do that. So like if you have a designed quarterback run for every three actual pass attempts, you are a guy who is way too reliant on running the ball as a quarterback. So I measured all of those things. And then I put these things into a ranking, then I sorted these guys to see basically who were the most gremlin-y quarterbacks in football this year. So, I sorted that in the opposite direction. I should go. That's okay. I can scroll down. So the most gremlin rules quarterbacks in the NFL this year were Justin Fields, number one, Jalen Hurts, number two. Number three was Jackson Dart. Number four was Marcus Mariota. Number five was Josh Allen. So you know, the Bills use him a lot as a designed runner. So obviously there are quarterbacks, but then you have Jaden Daniels right above that. So like that, those are the guys who are most used like gremlin quarterbacks. And then I also did what I called dishonorable yardage percentage. So I wanted to look at like how these guys are actually, how much of their production actually, because Josh Allen, yes, he was used like that, but he still got more production from non-gremlin plays than he did from the gremlin plays.
True.
So I wanted to look at like who got the highest percentage of their total yards on these plays. So this was screen yardage plus RPO yardage plus QB rushing yardage as a percentage of the quarterback's total yards. So that list was Jaden Daniels. He got 42.5% of his total yards from either running the ball, a screen, or an RPO.
Dishonor.
Number two, the guy that I compared Jaden Daniels to coming out, I said to remind him, was his backup. And you might have noticed that their offense really didn't get noticeably different or worse with his backup in. Marcus Mariota, 40.16%. Now, number three, Patrick Mahomes, 39.6%. Now, folks, you might say, okay, so there's nothing wrong with this. Patrick Mahomes is still being used like this. But, folks, what have you noticed about the Chiefs' offense the last 3 years? Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that as NFL defenses shifted to too high and all of this stuff specifically to take these kind of things away, have you noticed that the Chiefs' offense has basically lost all explosive element to it and basically only survives from Patrick Mahomes pulling miracles out of his ass 30 times a game?
Indeed.
Like, that's the problem, is that Andy Reid is no longer cutting edge. He's now behind the times. And I don't think Patrick Mahomes needs to play like this to survive. I think you could put Patrick Mahomes under center. I think you could ask him to play in a Jared Goff offense and get better results than they're getting, but it's become an anachronism, and that's why their offense is getting worse. Like, they don't have the wide receivers.
It's almost sad.
We
put this at the 62nd minute of this podcast, because when you showed me that number, I was like, that like the Chiefs organization needs
that is
to
the
be...
Matt Nagy that is the Matt Nagy should be shot yeah. number. And I yes. and when they let Matt Nagy go, I was like, okay, well, maybe they'll mix things up, maybe they'll bring in a guy that's can do some of this, and then they went and just got the guy from before
they
Nagy.
Just so brought Eric Bieniemy back.
That's Andy Reid's biggest problem, is that he's very incestuous. He does not hire from outside of his own team.
Andy Reid's biggest problem, it's all the incest, Kyle.
It's all the incest. Anyway, so yes, there is the Patrick Mahomes outlier, but again, this was Patrick Mahomes' worst season, arguably, yeah. as a passer. Number four was Shedeur Sanders. Mm-hmm. Number five was Kyler Murray. Number six was Jackson Dart. Number seven was Justin Fields. Number eight was Spencer Rattler. Number nine was Bo Nix. So, like, yeah, okay, guys. Like,
there you go.
Yes, Josh Allen was top five in gremlin usage because they run him a lot, but he was not getting the majority of his yards from playing.
Whoa.
Like this.
Whoa. I noticed that you didn't mention that Jalen Hurts also disappears from the second list.
Yes, because the Eagles, they honestly didn't do this stuff enough, probably.
Yeah, like, the Eagles needed to do it more.
Yeah, you're built to run like this. And so even though they tried, that's the worst thing, is that like they tried all this bullshit and they got worse at it. I also think in Jalen's defense somewhat, I think his designed run usage is tilted based on how many of those fucking tush pusses they use.
Yes.
Because Jalen Hurts as a designed runner, like on non-tush puss plays this year, they used him way less, which was a big problem.
They did.
And I get it. You don't want to risk the franchise quarterback. You paid him all this money, and he's not young anymore necessarily. You don't want to, but I bet that is the horse that brung you. Like, you got here by Jalen Hurts running the damn ball. You will run, make Jalen. And it's kind of like Seattle should have told Russell Wilson when Russell Wilson was like, I'm going to be a real quarterback now, daddy.
Yeah.
No, you play like Russell Wilson. That's how you got here. That's what you're going to do. Like, that's who you are. Jalen, that's who you are. I don't care if you don't want to run the ball. You got to, man. This whole thing is dependent on it. This is a house of cards, and that's one of the main ones. But yeah, so I mean, you look at those, the quarterbacks who are the highest in that, like, that is a list of guys that I don't trust, and that, like, that's not, other than Patrick Mahomes, that's not a list of elite quarterbacks here, folks. So, yeah, that's why, like, I don't particularly like these guys. That's why I'm not high on Jackson Dart, because, like, yes, the concoction of scrambles and design runs and timely deep balls, like, for 1 year, that bullshit worked. He had basically a diet version of Jaden Daniels' rookie year. I don't trust him whatsoever to sustain and build upon that. And now he doesn't even have Brian Daboll, who, for what it's worth, some offensive coordinators are better at this shit than others. I actually think Brian Daboll's a pretty good Gremlin Rules offensive coordinator. Like, if you're wanting to run like this, Brian Daboll gets it. I think that Andy Reid is still better than most. Cliff Kingsbury is the god of running this kind of offense. Like, Cliff Kingsbury, the thing Cliff does so well is he gets so creative in the run game that, like, he keeps you from playing his pass game, which is really basic honest, because he does so much shit in the run game. You have to always have that in mind. So Cliff Kingsbury is like the god of dude. There are some guys who are better at it than others, but Jackson Dart doesn't have one of those guys now. He's got Matt Nagy, and Jaden Daniels doesn't have Cliff Kingsbury anymore. He's got good old David Blah. So, like, I don't know what's going to happen to those guys, but I don't trust them. These guys have been gremlins their whole life. Their skill set's oriented to be gremlins. I don't trust them to turn it around. And that's why it's like, if you ask, like, okay, Caleb and Bo Nix were kind of on an EPA basis relatively in the same neighborhood of each other. Like, yeah, but to me, those are two ships passing in the night. You have Caleb Williams, who is clearly growing in this system and learning how to be a real NFL quarterback, and sometimes misfiring because he's trying to play with anticipation. He's trying to throw really tough, deep dig routes. And you have Bo Nix, who is as maxed out as he can get, because this is the highest possible EPA you can get out of an offense designed entirely around bubble screens, QB scrambles, and design shot plays, and never getting sacked and never turning the ball over. Most of his positives are actually just avoiding negatives. So, like, yeah, they're in relatively the same ballpark in some EPA burst measurements that really weight, like, QB scrambles and stuff. But, like, I think they go in two totally different directions from here, because one is a gremlin and one is not.
I think that's a beautiful way to put a bow on that.
Oh, my God, you said put a bow, because it was Bo Nix.
Put a Bo Nix on it.
Put a Bo Nix on it.
That's right.
So, anyways, right. I hope people enjoy this. I know I ranted a lot, but, like, I have touched on this, and I want everyone to keep all this in mind, because we're going to talk about Fernando Mendoza soon, because this is the central question for me about Fernando Mendoza, because, yeah, I'm like, are you a good quarterback who's been put in a gremlin offense, or are you a gremlin? Because if you are actually a gremlin, then the career path that people have laid out for you and the comps that they've laid out for you make no fucking sense to me. So yeah, we'll get into that. That's the teaser for the Fernando Mendoza thing.
Yeah, since this was a Kyle-centric episode, if you want a break next week, I am ready to go with Poles versus the Machines. Whenever you feel like it.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. That would be great. Right. Yeah. A while back, good friend of the Scottcast, Bobby Schmitz, really asked, like, how would just a machine that drafted the consensus player since the start of Poles' tenure, how would that machine compare to Poles himself? And Travis has hid this data from me.
I have.
He hasn't told me.
So next week, Kyle, all you get to do is just react.
I am so excited. Yeah, I can't wait. So that's going to be fun. So we're having fun, folks. We're having fun.
Hell yeah. Way out on that bumper floor. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving here.